All right, comedy legend Robert Smigel is a genius. He's behind TV fun. Does it bother you? Does it bother you? Genius? Genius or what? Genius or legend? Which one bothered you?
Genius is embarrassing. Legend reminds me how old I am.
Okay, fair enough. Well, he's the voice of Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. He's co-written films with Adam Sandler, wrote sketches on 425 episodes of SNL, endless Writers Guild and Primetime Emmy Awards. And Conan O'Brien replaces Letterman back in the day, whereas Robert played a big role in that, too. And now comes Triumph the Insult Comic Dog's new special, Let's Make a Poop on YouTube. And to talk about this comedy journey is Robert Smigel. Robert, it's been a while. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Whatever people say, hear your voice, see you, talk to you again.
Talk to you again. You nailed it. You nailed it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I have to ask you this question. So, you know, you went into the pre-dental program at Cornell University, political science from NYU. Chicago seems like where you got the comedy from. Players Workshop, Second City. This is it right here, right?
Yeah, my father was a successful dentist, and I had no sense that I could succeed at comedy. And so I went through a painful 5.5 years of college.
Oh, my God.
And when I got out, I had run into Tim Kazurinsky.
Yeah.
Great guy who was on Saturday Night Live at the time. And he told me about the Players Workshop at Second City. And I'd always wanted to be funny, or I guess I was funny. But I'd been so beaten down at this point by my failures at being a pre-dental student that I went, what the hell? So I went there for a summer.
Yeah.
And I had the best time. And then I went back and joined a comedy group with some of the friends I had made. And that's what led me to all of this. It was discovered in Chicago. Chicago's my town. Professionally, for sure. And I would probably live there if I could.
Yeah.
If I could get work.
Yeah, gotcha. So where did the funny come from, though? I mean, your dad was a dentist. He was a big figure in dentistry. So you went down that path for a little bit. But where did the funny?
He was a silly man. He would, like, stuff his patients when their mouths were stuffed with cotton. He would, and he was working on, say, a grandmother, you'd be like, so you have three grandchildren. That's wonderful. What if they were drowning? Which one would you save?
Oh, my God.
He just, he loved growing with people.
Yeah.
He had a big heart, and he was a brilliant man. And, so I wanted to follow in his footsteps because I had no other ambition in my life other than being funny, and I didn't think I could succeed at that.
Well, what's funny that you say that, though, is your dad, you do have part of your dad in what you're doing today, right?
In what way?
Comedy. Comedy.
Well, my dad was funny,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And he turned me on to the Marx Brothers and to Peanuts. He gave me a Peanuts book when I was 7 years old, and I was that was a big life-changing night. I stayed up later than I'd ever stayed up in my life reading a book called Here Comes Snoopy.
Wow.
Laughing my ass off.
Yeah.
And he had great taste, and yes, and he took me to Woody Allen and Mel Brooks movies. So a big part of it comes from.
Yeah, you know, sometimes when you talk about comedy, people talk about, like, stand-ups and stuff and, you know, watching Carson and so forth, but what you're mentioning is more about the writing. I mean, really, the funny in the movies, but probably the writing behind it.
Yeah, he was not as big a stand-up comedy guy. I discovered people on my own. And my heroes in the late 70s when I was a kid were, like, Steve Martin and Andy Kaufman, because they were kind of deconstructing comedy in a way that really fascinated me. And and I actually tried stand-up comedy at NYU, and I won a contest, and that was like the night that I realized, oh, maybe I can make strangers.
Ah.
But then I kind of didn't really pursue it until I ran into Tim Kazurinsky, like I said, and went for it.
You know, it's clear about the Chicago stuff, and I'm going to fast forward a little bit, but you know, the Dana Carvey Show, Waiters Who Are Nauseated by Food, the book cover was clearly ripped off of WGN's Family Classics, this red book cover with the gold writing, Prozo the Clown, Clutch Cargo on Conan, all very Chicago. And then you picked up a lot quick.
You know, Steve Carell and Stephen Colbert, they get credit for the later scene. That was completely their I just produced it. But yes, Clutch Cargo was something I'd never heard of until I went to Chicago, and then it was just something everybody would joke about. We should make fun of Clutch Cargo. We got to do a Clutch Cargo thing. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I never did anything until we started the Conan O'Brien show, and then Vito Damatopoulos was a writer that we had hired who was also from Chicago, and then he brought up Clutch Cargo. And I had wanted to have Conan interview people in the news that we would have people just impersonate. But it wasn't until Dino brought up just what can we do with Clutch Cargo that I put two and two together and was like, oh, that's such a funny way to do celebrity interviews, and so much cheaper than having to get costumes and makeup.
Yeah, right.
And then I ended up being 90% of the people Conan asked.
Was that your lips?
Yes, I was the mouth of Bill Clinton and Bob Dole and Donald Trump and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Just so many people. It was the most fun job I ever had.
But, I mean, for people who are living here in Chicago who really didn't have an origin, knowing where any of that came from, you'd watch it and be like, huh, that's pretty cool. Pretty Chicago, growing up in Chicago. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. No, that was an inside joke for Chicagoans for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Then you started writing for SNL. How did that all come about? Was it Al Franken that saw you somewhere?
Yes. Yeah. Al Franken and Tom Davis, his partner, they did great stuff on the original Saturday Night Live. And then they went on to have their own stand-up act together. And they were kind of like Bob and Ray. And they were very inspirational as well. And then they were shooting a movie in Chicago when I was there doing a comedy show. And one of the guys in my troupe named Dave Reynolds, who went on years later to co-write Finding Nemo, he was cast in their movie called One More Saturday Night, and Al and Tom were playing like a Grateful Dead kind of musician that were I don't really remember the plot, but it was the greatest movie ever. because it led to them meeting me and I was an extra in the movie because every young person in Chicago was that summer. And then Dave got them to see our show, and they came, and Al and Tom were really nice. We went out for beers afterward to Zum Deutschen Eck.
Oh, yeah.
And,
wow, yeah.
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 And we had, and you know, Al was really nice. Yeah, that's really nice. You remind me of Eugene Levy crossed with Albert Brooks. Like, okay, so basically you notice that I'm Jewish, okay? you remind me of this Jew and that Jew.
That's nice, yeah.
No, it was very nice, and I thought that was it. Okay, that was a nice little bit of validation.
Mm-hmm.
Then, like, 2 weeks later, out of nowhere, Lorne Michaels comes back to Saturday Night Live. He'd been gone for 5 years, and I read that he's hired Alan Penn to produce the show. And within a week or two, they came back to Chicago with another producer and watched our show again. And then three of us got to audition, and one of us almost got cast. This other actor named Doug Dale, who was brilliantly funny. But I ended up being the only person hired as the writer.
Wow.
That was bittersweet, but the bittersweet part lasted about 30 seconds. And I was like, see ya! What was I going to do?
Yeah.
I had to take it. And it was crazy. My first week was Madonna. Madonna was
my God. Yeah.
And this is like peak material girl Madonna.
Yeah, 85.
Literally the biggest star in the world at the time.
Yeah.
And that was my first show. And I was a backup singer to her in a script that I wrote. It was like 3 weeks earlier, I'd been living in a crap hole above, Campeche Mexican restaurant in the near north side.
Yeah.
And now I'm backing up Madonna.
It was pretty surreal. I was going to say pretty surreal. Yeah. And that was at a time, too, that Lauren, man, I mean, that show was in the dumpster kind of at that time.
You know, it struggled when Lauren wasn't there. But then the very last year was the year they hired, like, Christopher Guest and Harry Shearer and Billy Crystal.
Oh,
and
that's
Martin
right. Short,
they just loaded it up with all-stars. And it was a great season. But then I don't think any of those people wanted to come back for more than 1 year.
Yeah.
And then they just decided to bring Lauren back. And Lauren just started from scratch. And if he hadn't, I would never have been hired because, you know, I was completely unknown.
Right. We're talking to comedy legend Robert Smigel. And there is more with him next on 720 WGN. All right. We are talking to comedy legend Robert Smigel. You get credit for so many of these sketches. I mean, my favorite. I mean, there's so many of them. I mean, so many. But William Shatner at the Star Trek convention telling the crown to get a life. Mm-hmm. Classic, yeah. Classic. And all the Chicago stuff. Like, there's another reference. Chuck Swirsky. All of a sudden, we're talking about, yes. You know, the whole, the guys doing
so
their...
I wrote that sketch with Bob Odenkirk. I had noticed...
Right.
When I first moved to Chicago, I'm a giant sports fan, so my first weekend... 1982, I went to a Cubs game by myself. I didn't have any friends yet. I just went all by myself and walked up to the box office and, what's the best ticket you got? And they were like, we got one behind the dugout if you want to. I was like, what? It was just like, this is not New York.
Oh,
I could not believe it. And I'm watching Tom Seaver pitch for the Reds against the Cubs, and I'm having a great time. But then I noticed people in the bleachers screaming at each other, left field sucks, right field sucks, throwing ball home runs back. And this is so cool. The coolest people in the building are sitting in the
bleachers.
Worst seats.
Yeah,
and they're
absolutely.
Having the most fun.
Yeah,
and it was just like such a, it was so perfectly Chicago, just like no phony status. You know, it was part of what made me fall in love with the place. But then I went to a Sox game, and that's, I think, where I really noticed, like, all these guys wearing aviator shades at the time. And they all had the walrus mustache, virility,
uh-huh.
This badge of virility. And that's when, and they just, there was some little glint of arrogance to their way they strut around. And that's where I came up with that Bears, just like in the money in the bank, my friend.
It's very true. It's very true. Yeah. You captured it.
I don't know. I don't think it's that way anymore, but it was, sure was back then.
Oh, I think it's still around. It's absolutely still around. It was probably a lot stronger back then, but still around.
Yeah.
But you're talking about Odenkirk.
Now it's like, that's the longest. I can't believe people still say that. Like, catchphrases usually have a shelf life, like about 5 years, maybe.
No. But going to a Bears game.
Not this one.
Mm-mm. Watching a Bears game in a bar. Everyone's using that phrase. Absolutely.
I know. But they still use it on national TV.
Like, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And Pelt and other people. I mean, the Bears still use it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. You should have gotten a cut from the shirts that are being produced with the...
Oh, man. They don't... You get, like, pennies... a dollar it's nothing
really.
I don't get anything for that but it's fun to milk it. Maybe one of those guys will show up. I'm doing something with George Wendt in Kansas City.
That's cool.
On Saturday night for the Big Slick event in Kansas City. It's a charity event. And there may be some there might be something on Monday night. You might see something that reminds you of such a moment on Saturday Night Live.
I love that you talk about that, about George Wendt, because I was at a charity golf outing some years ago, and there's some local celebs and Chicago people here, and I literally, wherever it was, I looked at the bar to go get a drink, and I looked to my right, and at the bar was George just sitting by himself at the end of the bar having a beer. And you just kind of had to shake your head. Yeah, by himself.
He wasn't swarmed and with 10 people having...
throughout the night, but the moment I looked at him, he was just sitting down there sipping on a beer in a mug.
That's...
iconic.
He used to, like, in the days when Cheers was big, he couldn't walk into a bar without 5 people wanting to, you know...
Of course.
...load him up.
Of course.
Irish handcuffs, he would call it.
Of course,
A stein in each hand.
Now, Conan, I want to talk a little bit about Conan. Conan and SNL, you guys were writing together on SNL, but before, you know, Letterman was moving to CBS, when did you do, you did a pilot with him called Look Well. What was that all about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we were both Adam West freaks. Adam West was the original Batman in the 60s on ABC television, and it was a phenomenon. And I was way too young to appreciate it when I was a little kid, but when I was a teenager and watched him reruns, it was maybe the funniest show I'd ever seen. And his performance, and if you ever catch like the 1966 Batman movie. So Conan and I and Greg Daniels went on to do The Office. We all went to the Cinema Village downtown theater when the Michael Keaton Batman came out in 1990. And but this place was playing the 1966 movie.
Love it.
With Adam West. And we laughed our asses off. It was the best time and just marveled at how funny that guy was.
All right, we are talking to comedy legend Robert Smigel. Letterman's moving to CBS, and Conan, you know, was a writer at the time, and you just would never think Conan, as a host, it just never would have dawned on anybody. Like, when he got the role, you know, the job, people were like, ugh. And you wanted him to have that role just as much, because you knew this could be lot of fun.
Well, Conan, if you didn't know him, obviously, it's like, what the hell is NBC doing? But people around the show, Saturday Night Live, as well as people who worked with him at The Simpsons, where he had already left SNL and was there for a year or two.
Right.
And we all knew that he was just like the most spontaneously funny person around, and that he had amazing energy, and that like it didn't make sense to hire someone without any TV experience. But if you were going to take a shot on anyone, this was the guy.
Yeah,
that was, and so he wanted me to be his head writer, and I was very happy to do it because, like, oddly enough, he had been tabbed by Lorne to produce this late-night show originally.
Ah,
because he had left for The Simpsons, and so Lorne likes to have people come back and work for him. So, you know, I was still at SNL. He didn't want me to leave SNL. In fact, even when Conan became the host, he didn't want me to work with Conan. He wanted somebody else to do that job. That was just a dream to me.
Yeah.
The job I dreamed of doing was to reinvent, get the chance to do what Letterman did, you know,
right,
kind of just reinvented it in a different way. And so a lot of the ideas I had and the writers had alongside us were based off of this mantra that I kept repeating, which is that we are going to do like the opposite of what Letterman did. Like, a lot of the ideas came from like, what didn't he do? And we're going to do that. And so, like, really, in one sentence, I would say we're going to be the show that makes things up, as opposed to all the found humor that Letterman did. Well, you know, that was his thing, and he did it brilliantly, but we didn't want to copy him.
No, you guys made it your own. Right, really early on.
Yes, and that's probably the job I'm most proud of and will always cherish the most.
I love that.
Getting to do that job. I loved the opportunity, and I loved working with Conan, obviously, and with these young writers like Dino, and Louis C.K. was one of those writers as well, and he was absolutely... he came up with a lot of great stuff.
I love that. I love that. And, you know, the gift that keeps on giving is Triumph. That is, you're in your 25th year of Triumph. And I'm going to tell you.
And not in dog years. That's in human years.
But like,
that is old.
But anytime I see him pop up on YouTube or on when Conan was still on TBS, like doing the Wiener Circle, I think I've showed so many people out of context, you know, having a couple drinks, sitting down. Hey, have you ever seen Triumph at the Wiener Circle with Jack McBrayer? Because it is the funniest. That is probably the funniest. But I saw you on the WGN Morning News a few weeks ago. And, you know, you make Robin and Larry and everybody, it's just laugh out loud funny what you've created there.
Thank you. Well, you know, I look at him as more than just, not just a character. I kind of look at him as just a stand-up. He's just a comedian who happens to be a rubber dog.
Yes.
But, like, yeah, it's a very versatile kind of act. Ultimately, he's just telling jokes, but he's doing it through his voice and his perspective, and so that's what makes it funny. And so that one is actually less of a surprise to me to try and end up having a long career.
Where did you find the puppet?
But yeah, so like, where did I find the puppet? I found it, so my wife Michelle and I had, we were newlyweds in 1993, just when the Conan show was starting, and we went to shop for furniture, and there was a quaint little country furniture store called Mabel's in Manhattan, and they had a rack of realistic animal puppets heads that was like meant to be their little whimsical touch to the store. And, like, I'm supposed to be looking for furniture, and I see these puppets, and I'm
distracted.
Completely obsessed. Huh?
Distracted.
I'm just laughing my ass off because I'd never seen such a realistic puppet. Like, when you think of animal puppets, it's always, you know, this other, you know, cartoony kind of look.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
So these were, like, sculpted, dead-on, realistic, and it made me laugh so hard because I always, that was my, you know, style of, like, animal humor in general. Like, even when I started the Conan show with Conan, I would tell the writers, any animal characters that we do have to have realistic animal faces. They can't, and no human heads sticking out of the animal costume in that cute kind of Fruit of the Loom commercial.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody else still does it. Like the cicadas the other day on SNL.
I saw that. Yeah.
I just, you know, I understand what they're doing and they're showcasing the performers.
And then here comes a Dana Carvey show somewhere in between there. I will tell you that show was way before its time. It really was. It was so well written. So well written. So many great people on there before its time.
Yeah.
I think anyway.
Well, yeah, that's another phrase that always depresses me.
Before its time, well.
I always like, oh, no, not another. Like, even when I'm in the middle of a project, I'm like, is this going to be something that I'm, like, showing at the Vic and, you know, 20 years later, and everybody's going to say it was before its time. Like, I need
you
money.
Look at that very differently.
I have children to, you know,
yes, you
support.
Do.
It's not enough anymore to just be like, I was too cool to make money, man.
Yeah. No, I get it.
A couple of years ago, I did a show. It happened to me again. It was so ironic. I did a show for Fox. Like, you probably haven't even heard of it. It was like with puppets. It was called Let's Be Real, and it was like a spitting image type show.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I did it, and it was with puppets, and I promise you, if you look it up, the writing of those sketches, I hired, like, some of my favorite people that I've written with over the years, and the writing of those sketches was on par with the Dana Carvey show.
Oh,
and, you know, but just, you know, and then the irony was the Dana Carvey show, one of the reasons it failed was because it followed Home Improvement with Tim Allen.
Mm-hmm. Different audience.
This is 25 years later.
Yeah.
I'm doing this show with puppets for Fox. And we do one special, and it does very well. It follows, like, the Masked Singer, and it gets a good rating and good reviews. And they're like, great, we're going to order a season, like, you know, like 6 episodes or something. Everything's short nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
6 episodes, are like, and we're going to put it on right after Tim Allen's show. I'm not kidding. That whatever that show was called, Last Man Standing.
Yes, Last Man. Yep.
Yeah. So here it's 25 years later. I hadn't done a primetime show since the Dana Carvey show, and they have me following Tim Allen again.
Great.
Yeah.
That sounds great. All right. I kind of kept you long enough here. I heard Triumph might be able to come out after we take a quick break. Can we do a little bit of that?
Ooh. I'll talk to his manager.
Okay. All right. We're talking to comedy icon Robert Smigel, and Triumph is coming up next on 720 WGN. All right, Dave Plyer, 720 WGN. We're talking to comedy legend Robert Smigel, and now Triumph is live with us. Triumph, how are you?
Who's this? What am I talking to?
Oh, this is Dave Plyer.
Oh, okay. And why am I? Oh, this is a radio. Yeah. I get it. I remember radio.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Dave Plyer, great. Great to see you. I mean, no, you can't say that because it's radio. 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 Got it.
That's right. That's right. Hey, we're you know, ratings are good. We're very happy. Got Bob Surratt in the morning. Been around for a long, long time.
Oh, Bob Surratt. Yeah, he's how old is he in dog years?
I'm not sure.
Man.
Somebody looked that up.
I remember he did those whimsical little pieces in the 80s.
Yes. Yes, he did. Yes, when you're... Yeah.
Now, this is good. The radio is the perfect transition. You don't have to... Have to have an audience. No, don't worry about not getting laughs.
Yeah, very much so. I guess so.
He's all set.
So what about this YouTube special? Let's make a poop.
Yes.
Yeah, talk about that.
Let's make a poop on the Team Coco YouTube page. Big deal. Big stuff. I play a game. I'm a game show host now.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happens when you... When you get old, you host game shows.
Right. Or radio.
I have my own game show. It's called Let's Make a Poop. And, I bring on celebrity panelists, all the biggest names imaginable, my friend. And on the YouTube show, I have Rob Schneider.
Mm.
The actual Rob Schneider.
Okay. Right. Wow.
How do you think I got him?
How?
His thumb was out, and I pulled over on the highway.
Okay. Wow.
That was Rob. And yeah. Then I also got Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was good. He's,
yeah.
We got to sing a lot of his parody songs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was exciting. Songs like, oh, boy. They're all about food, you know.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. Some of them are. Yeah.
You know, instead of wanted, dead or alive, it was, sorry, I can't believe I'm not even.
Hold on.
Oh, yes. No, I sang all of his song parodies to him. He loved it. He sure. Loved it. Songs like, instead of Landslide, the Stevie Nicks hit.
Yeah.
Did you know he did the song called Mudslide?
Look, I remember that one, but I listened to it later.
He didn't know he did it either, but he wrote it. You know,
yeah.
It was beautiful. It was like, well, I've been drinking Starbucks lattes and Chipotle is right next door. Mocha grande, burrito picante, straight out my ass, they pour. By now he was in tears, you know, remembering
sure.
The song.
Of course.
And how beautiful it was.
Yeah.
And if you see my reflection in the blue water bowl, well, the mudslide will turn it brown. Oh, the mudslide will turn it brown. Weird Al Yankovic, man. He's amazing.
He made a living.
Just amazing what he can write. So I had that, and, and then we play games. We ask them questions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We ask questions. Would you like to try playing the game along with me?
I would love to. Yes, please.
Okay, so it's sort of like Jeopardy.
Okay.
And you have to guess the answer, and preferably a funny answer.
Okay, all right. Okay.
Human beings are separated from these by only a single chromosome.
Oh, what is a monkey?
Sorry, the correct answer is what is Marjorie Taylor Greene?
Okay, sorry.
Single
got
chromosome. We would have also accepted Jake and Logan Paul.
Of course you would have. Okay. All right.
Want to try again?
Yeah, let's do another one.
In 2023, sales of Bud Light dropped significantly due to this.
poor marketing judgment?
No, sorry. The correct answer, why did sales drop significantly in 2023? Due to this. What is Ben Affleck having a dry January?
That did it. Wow.
Okay. In his career with the Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan lost a total of 415 of these.
Well, I mean, obviously basketball game. Oh, baseball. No, he didn't play baseball that long. Basketball games.
Sorry. Hands of blackjack per day.
Okay. Well, Triumph's comedy special, Let's Make a Poop, is now on YouTube. Triumph, was this fun on radio doing this with us?
Yeah, it reminded me of, you know, when I was just starting out. You know, literally like 40 years ago.
Okay, good.
when radio was, you know, something that I would give a crap about. It was an absolute joy for me to poop on.